Blog Talk Radio.
James Bond Secure, Conservative Perspective. And tonight we're doing that on Blog Talk Radio. And what you do is you go to Blog Talk Radio and you look for the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And it's through those studios that you can find the Conservative Perspective. We have a live incarnation of this program that goes out two nights a week, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Plus, we have a recorded version that we do. And that is that's syndicated by the Patriot. No, what, God, man, so many networks. No, sometimes I get tongue tied with all the places I've been. Basically, what it means is I can't hold a job, and nobody wants me as a staple. But we do it. we do it two nights a week live, Tuesdays and Thursdays here, blogtalkradio.com, and then when you get to blogtalkradio.com, you go to the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And you'll find us Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The recorded version that I was trying so desperately to tell you about, I do on the weekends, and that goes out for play on the Talk America radio network. And what you do in that case, if you want to hear the recorded program, you go to talkamericaradio.org. They have two audio streaming channels, a Liberty and a Justice stream. And ACP appears on either one of those at various times throughout the day and the week. Well, what shall we talk about now? I had a plan, but you guys know how I am about plans. The big news, I guess we just go ahead and hit that. I'm still hating on John Brennan, and I'm not over that. That every now and then, one of these characters comes up in this rogues gallery of villains that have been arrayed on the left to try and take down the president, and that's what they are, man. They're villains, okay? These are Hydra agents. I don't know how many times I got to say it, but that's what they are. First things first, though, the jury and one-time Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort's first – did I say Manafort? Sorry, Paul. Paul Manafort's first criminal trial has finalized this verdict on 8 of the 18 felony counts he faced. And that verdict, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, is guilty. Now, the other 10 counts ended in a mistrial with jurors unable to reach a unanimous verdict. Manafort was found guilty on 5 counts of tax fraud, 2 of bank fraud, and 1 for failure to properly register a foreign bank account. The jurors informed Judge T.S. Ellis that they were prepared to deliver their verdict in a note shortly after 11 a.m. this morning. According to reports, the note asked what it means for the final verdict if they were unable to reach a consensus on one of the 18 counts of bank fraud and tax evasion. Judge Ellis reportedly informed the jury that they could reach a partial verdict, which is not unusual. Ellis urged them to return to deliberation and to try and reach a verdict on all charges. Shortly after 4 p.m., the jury sent a second note to the bench indicating that they had reached a verdict on 8 counts and could not reach a consensus on the other 10. Judge Ellis polled the jurors on the remaining 10 counts and, satisfied no consensus could be reached, declared the jury deadlocked on those counts. The jury then announced their verdict on the 8 counts, guilty in each case. Now, the felonies for which Manafort was found guilty carry a theoretical maximum of more than 200 years in prison. The special counsel Bob Mueller's prosecutors are expected to seek a far shorter sentence in the range of maybe 8 to 10 years. Manafort will face a second criminal trial in neighboring Washington, D.C. on additional felonies, including failing to register as a foreign agent. None of the charges in either of these cases, let me say that again, since I'm mush-mouthing everything else, none of the charges in either of these cases, the one that they've kind of, you know, they got a partial conviction, or a partial verdict, rather, and then the upcoming trial in Washington, D.C., none of the charges filed against Paul Manafort in either of these two cases have anything to do with his work with the 2016 Trump campaign. But the trials represent the first major public hearing of the findings of the Mueller investigation, which officially was charged with investigating collusion with the Russian government by that campaign. And my friends, and you are my friends, there's plenty of collusion to be found should Herr Mueller decide he wants to look in the direction where all the colluding went on. I'm not exactly sure what to make of this, but then I saw one of my friends, a lawyer friend on Facebook, Gene Berardelli, a fellow, well, he's going to be back in the saddle soon, had a couple health things going on, but he squared away and he is ready to rock again. So we'll be hearing from Gene. You know what? I'm going to try to get Gene on the show. Gene Berardelli, and this is what he had to say about it, and I'm just going to paraphrase it here, but it makes perfect sense. In this case, in this particular trial with Paul Manafort, this may have been actual justice in action, and here's why. According to Gene, the jury apparently rejected the prosecutorial overreach, which was so clearly, you know, so clearly seen and so heavy-handed, so clearly defined, so heavily handed. However, there were things that they looked at that the prosecution had brought to light and decided that Manafort was guilty. So, you know, it's kind of like Solomon's wisdom, is the way Gene put it, the baby's cut in half and everybody should be happy. However, that being said, it has absolutely no bearing whatsoever, none, not in the slightest, and is in no way, no how, indicative of any type of collusion on the part of the Donald Trump campaign or paid agents of the Donald Trump campaign or intermediaries or campaign volunteers or managers or anyone associated. What's going to happen to Paul Manafort? I don't know. Is he going to get any time? I mean, the guys, okay, they have found him guilty of these things. Is he someone that needs to be put in prison? Can he be fined? What, I mean, and even if he is put in prison, you know, Republican presidents can pardon people too. Just saying. Not that they do all the time, but sometimes they do. When the case is merit. Christian Saucier, good case in point. Donald Trump manumitted his sentence and cut him loose. There will be those, and I'm not exactly sure how you spin this. This could be one of these situations where, very simply put, the president, you know, he's made some bad choices. They didn't work out. Let's put it that way. He's made choices that didn't work out. And, but again, this has nothing to do with the mandate that was given to Robert Mueller. And that mandate was, of course, where's the collusion, dude? Pin it down. Well, as far as the Trump campaign goes, I don't think that there is any collusion. This thing's been going on for almost 2 years now, and they haven't found anything. They've spent a gazillion dollars and nothing. Manafort. Of course, last week, and I'm sure there's going to be more. We'll probably follow up. We'll probably touch base on this again on the Thursday show when we have more on it. This just happened about 3 or 4 hours ago. I know all the heads on Fox and everywhere else are yammering like monkeys in a tree over this, and they should. And we'll talk about it again on Thursday when the smoke clears from this and we have a bit clearer picture as to what conceivably it does mean, if it means anything at all. You know, flatulence in a whirlwind. So we'll see. John Brennan. We got to go back to John Brennan. I hate that guy. I never liked him to start out with. I always found him a bit off-putting, especially, you know, from the time of the Trump candidacy and on, and now that Trump's president of the United States. This guy's just absolutely been unhinged, and he's been everywhere doing this crap all the time, running his mouth and shooting down the president. Well, push came to shove, and the attacks and the conduct of Comrade Brennan, and you know why I say that, and I'm going to tell you again. The conduct was so egregious, it was so horrible, that the president said, you know what? I'm revoking your security clearance. It's a privilege anyway, and that privilege comes with certain responsibilities in terms of your conduct, in terms of your character, in terms of your judgment. You're failing all over the place. Revoked. You're revoked. So, this happens, and as soon as it does, just like they do every time this guy does something, their heads implode. They just blow up every single time. The media, the never Trumpers, all these cats. Donald Trump is in a room full of kittens with a laser pointer. I know I've said it before, but it's a great analogy, and that's exactly what it is. He is in a room full of kittens with a laser pointer. And when he doesn't want them bothering him anymore, he shines his laser pointer over here on immigration, and they all go running, meow, 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 meow. And then he, you know, and that they get bored with that. Then he shines it over here on tariffs or the European Union or NATO or meeting with Kim Jong-un or hanging out and doing this press conference with Vladimir Putin like every other president's done with every other leader, except he's a traitor. He's treasonous. Treasonous, that's the one. And so every time this happens, every time something like this happens, Brennan's out there front and center. Yakada, 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 yakada. So Donald says, shut up already. But Brennan doesn't shut up. He screams bloody murder. And the first thing that happens is he wants to, and this happens all the time on the left. And it happens, I guess, in celebrity, whatever, celebrity, in that universe. First thing they got to do, man, they got to play victim. They got to play victim. And what does he do? He says that his first, his right to free speech is being affected. This privilege, not a right. He is not guaranteed this. It is a privilege being taken away from him. The consequences of such are that his free speech is being stifled. So since they're making all this noise about free speech, and since the First Amendment is so critical to our freedom, probably a good idea for us to revisit what it says, and that is this. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. That's it. That's it. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. So in short, you can say anything you want, short of inciting riot or the famously misquoted shouting of fire in a crowded movie house. That is, you cannot say things that would commonly be expected to cause physical harm to others. You also cannot say things that are deliberately defamatory, since libel and slander cause harm to reputations. I did not read anything in the First Amendment that has anything to do with the access of information. A free press is necessary to our freedoms, since it can expose malfeasance in government that could potentially harm us. That's why we have the Freedom of Information Act. It allows citizens to pry out information that the swamp would rather conceal, much as Judicial Watch and the American Center for Law and Justice do. But there are limits on what the public is allowed to know. Sorry about the creaky chair. I got to get that fixed. Certain information can be restricted if releasing it will cause harm greater than the value of the public's interest in knowing it. For example, doxing the jury in Paul Manafort's trial, that would place them at risk. There's also a lot of properly restricted information in the national security arena. One really critical injury resulted when WikiLeaks dumped the code of the CIA's hacking tools on March 6th. Now, we can disagree on how those tools were used. No question. But in disclosing it, the result is that hostile actors learned ways to protect their data from our spies. And it was a former CIA employee who was charged for leaking that information. How did that employee get the information in the first place? Well, he was granted a security clearance, and that allowed him to see information that must not be seen by the public. He was allowed to see it in order to do his job. He violated the terms of the privilege. Not dead air, just thinking it over. John Brennan was granted the highest level security clearance because as director of the CIA, he had to be privy to a vast array of highly sensitive information in order to do his job. But it also imposed a very serious gag on him. Anything he learned must not be disclosed to anyone who was not entitled to learn it from him. In short, his security clearance had nothing to do with free speech. It had everything to do with restricting his ability to speak on sensitive matters. In some cases, there is a governmental interest in keeping specific security clearances alive. From time to time, former intelligence officers can be recalled to confer with sitting officers. Their experience can be valuable. Does Brennan's security clearance touch on speech at all? Well, the answer must be a qualified yes, but what happened is not a direct restraint. As long as Brennan uses his specialized and sensitive knowledge as background to frame public statements without revealing any sensitive information, yeah, he can use that material. He can attend events where others with that knowledge speak together. He can work for companies that need his expertise and access to guide the company's interaction with government. This is for the government's benefit, but unless he is speaking to someone with an equivalent level of clearance who has a need to know the things that John Brennan knows, he has to keep his mouth shut. It's pretty easy to see how a high-level security clearance could allow John Brennan to make money. He can serve on the board of a defense contractor. He can schmooze with friends in high places, gaining information that might make him a better pundit. CNN obviously thought this when they hired him. President Trump's revocation of Comrade Brennan's security clearance came as a result of Brennan's indefensible behavior. He's been vitriolic toward the president, making all sorts of unhinged accusations. This sort of activity would result in a person being denied a new clearance because access to sensitive information requires careful decorum in the person learning it. As the White House put it, the president has a constitutional responsibility to protect classified information and who has access to it. John Brennan leaked operational information about a spy in the Al-Qaeda operation. Those acts alone should have resulted in the immediate revocation of his clearance. And this brings us to a key point. Security clearances are issued for the benefit of the government. They are completely discretionary. And the holder, in this case, Comrade Brennan, has no right to the privilege. None. The moment the government finds you not useful, your clearance can be pulled. Of course, in Brennan's case, due to the very high level he had been cleared, his value in the private sector would be tremendous. But the moment that clearance disappears, his financial prospects evaporated. It's hard not to see a motive for Brennan's fury. And as for the others who joined that chorus, well, we should look at Sutton's Law. In other words, follow the money. How many of these people, and there were over 200 intelligence professionals and former intelligence directors and grand high muckety mucks in the intelligence community, wrote a letter of censure, an open letter to President Trump saying, shame on you, bad man. But how many of these guys wrote this. You know, how many of did these guys write a letter when President Obama scrubbed dozens of security clearances? No, just this one. And how many of these guys would lose some pretty fat money situations if they lost their clearances? Well, the security clearance, or revoking John Brennan's security clearance, doesn't have anything directly to do with free speech. However, security clearances, when they are held outside of a government job, they are a tool, a very effective tool for fattening wallets. Don't be fooled, America. John Brennan hasn't lost one syllable of his free speech by having his security clearance revoked. What he has lost is an inside track with those in the know. He has also lost a very nice retirement income. And I find that to be fundamentally, completely deserving. And having said that, let me say this. The guys that Brennan has aligned himself with, that's all they're going to do. They're going to send this letter. And the reason they're sending this letter really doesn't have anything to do with Brennan. His security clearance is gone. It will not be restored unless, you know, some Democrat comes in after Trump and Brennan's still alive and they decide to reinstate it. It's gone forever. If it can even be rescinded. I don't know that can be rescinded. But laws are made to be broken, and Democrats and guys like Barack Obama and the leftist group that's running the Democrat Party now, they're good at breaking laws. So, you know, this may only be temporary. But it's going to hurt him where he feels it the most, and that's in his wallet. But here's the thing I don't get, and I said this about John Brennan last week. I'm going to say it again. The guy is a communist. He is a communist. In 1976, and I talked about this, I'll tell you, I talked about this a little bit on the Sunday show as well. When I was a kid in the mid-60s and early 70s, mid-70s, the possibility that the Russians could drop one on the United States and would drop one on the United States. Things were that tense. You know, it was still pretty high. It wasn't as high as it was in the 50s and early 60s. But in the tail end of that, the Cold War was still at its height. Communists were the enemy. That's all there is to it. Communists are still the enemy, by the way. The media and many in the Democrat Party don't treat them as that. And a lot of people in the Republican Party don't treat them like that. Right, Mitch McConnell? In 1976, the Communist Party USA fielded a presidential candidate by the name of Gus Hall. And Communist Party USA member John Brennan cast his vote in the bicentennial election for Gus Hall, Communist Party USA candidate for President of the United States. John Brennan, flash forward 40 years, director of the Central Intelligence, a communist. Well, he's not a communist. He was director of CIA. He's been in government, man. It's probably just some dumb thing he did when he was young. John Brennan is 114 years old. He would have been in his 80s when he did that. This was no kid. This, all right, is an exaggeration, but this was no kid. This was no callow, naive youth. This was a guy that knew what he was doing. And if he's not a communist, which I don't understand how you cannot be a communist when you vote for a communist presidential candidate, but apparently, you know, then he's a communist sympathizer. communist infiltration of the government is absolutely nothing new. It's been going on since the 1930s, and it's been successful. Trevor Loudon, friend of the program and a guest on the show a few years ago, at the time he had a book out called The Enemies Within, and he spoke at length, and this is what he talked about, was communist infiltration into government. You don't see much of it in history because history has now been rewritten by leftists in the university systems. But yeah, it's been going on since the 1930s. It's been very effective too. John Brennan, director of the CIA. Well, we're down to the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to take a little bit of a break. Because, quite frankly, all this talking makes a man thirsty. And I am desperately trying to get something to come up here on the board. And I'm not seeing it. And now I'm seeing it. We will be back with more of a conservative perspective after I get something to drink and this brief musical interlude.
Ain't got a dime to my name, what a terrible shame. Ho, hum, ho, ho, hum. Just found a hole in my shoe when my stocking shows through. Ho, hum, ho, ho, hum. I know that when you're as free as a bird in a tree, life is a wonderful whim. Look at the crank with his dough in the bank. Don't you feel sorry for him? Rolling along at a loss, never gathering moss. Ho, hum. Ho, 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 hum. No terrific success, I ought to worry, I guess. Ho, 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 ho. I like a shady old tree, what's the matter with me? Ho, 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 ho. There's nothing quite as grotesque as the man at the desk. Looking outside at the sun, shirts made of silk and a diet of milk. Maybe he thinks he has fun. I've got the vagabond itch. I guess I'll never get rich. Ho, hum. Ho, 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 ho.
Midnight at the Oasis. Send your camel to bed. Shadows painting our faces. Traces of romance in our heads.
That's just a great tune. I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. I have always dug that tune from the very first time I heard it way back in the early 1970s. Maria Muldaur, Midnight at the Oasis. Of course, before that, Bing Crosby. You wonder, man, what a change up. Well, for those of you in the know, it's not necessarily a change up. The Crosby tune, Ho Hum, came from a Hope and Crosby Road picture, The Road to Morocco, and a little Northern African action there. And, of course, Midnight at the Oasis is pretty damn self-explanatory. We're not going to go into it because it's a really cool song, and they were both excellent choices. Enough said. Welcome back. This is A Conservative's Perspective here on Blog Talk Radio. Here on Blog Talk Radio at the Patriot Nation Radio Network. So what you do, you'll, of course, log on www.blogtalkradio.com, and you'll find the Patriot Nation Radio Network, which is the vision of our good friend, Mr. Mark Hoffman. And Mark has a show on Mondays, Patriot Nation Radio Live. He has a video component of his show that is available on Facebook as well. I've been talking about this, and at some point, don't be surprised if I half-heartedly try some kind of video audio combination of a podcast. There's a lot of technical crap to it that I don't fully understand it, but I'm working on it and I'm thinking about it. And if I do, it's not going to be really that big a deal, but it seems to me that a lot of guys, you know, Mark's getting a lot of coverage. He's getting a lot of people watching him, and his show is a great show anyway. And he's fully deserving of all the success he's getting. We'll see. That's all I'm going to say. We'll see. At the bottom of the hour before we went to the break, I had mentioned our friend Trevor Loudon's book, Enemies Within, and we were talking about the communist infiltration. I was talking about the communist. You guys were nodding off. Because I know, man, sometimes this stuff is kind of dry. But again, if we don't go into the weeds after them, then they're safe. They're betting on us not going into the weeds after them. We can't let that happen. But we were talking about communist infiltration in the upper levels of the federal government. It's been going on for a long time. And once upon a time, our intelligence services and the FBI were really good at rooting these cats out. I'm not so sure these days because I think they're just another wing of it. But we talk about that. And socialism, communism, one's just a little further down the path. They're both tyrannies. Socialism is a soft tyranny, and communism, obviously not so much. And we have to fight socialism. Because if we don't fight socialism, we got to fight communism. Neither one of them are particularly easy fights. But in the arena of ideas, in the community of political discourse, we really don't have much of a choice. And I found an article a couple days back called Fighting Socialism. It was written by John Scotto. I got it from American Thinker, and this is what he has to say on it. And I hope that it resonates with you as well as it did me. As wrong and warped as most leftist views seem today, the reality is that most people on the right, or on the left rather, on the left, fight relentlessly for their cause. Now here's the question. Can the majority of conservatives look themselves in the mirror and honestly say they fight for their beliefs and principles to the same degree as the left? Our United States Constitution is the rock of America, the foundation for maintaining our way of life. It is the main cog within the engine of freedom. Freedom is fragile, and it needs to be cared for. It can be sustained, but only through vigilance, a secure United States border, a respect for law enforcement, a belief in a strong United States military are some of the key conservative principles that keep all of us safe and free. Individual liberty, limited government, lower taxes, personal responsibility are among the many fundamental concepts that we as conservatives need to continue to promote when confronting leftists. When conservatives are able to clearly communicate their logic-based beliefs and principles to others, conservatism inevitably wins. It is imperative that we highlight the huge differences between conservatism and socialism. When we're able to illustrate these differences, most people begin rejecting socialism. Individualism and critical thinking are integral parts within a free society, as opposed to collectivism and group thought, the two main components of socialism, which stagnate a society. Diversity of thought is an important concept for people who value a free society. Education and the encouragement of diversity of thought within our schools produces critical thinkers and entrepreneurs. The use of leftist indoctrination within our public school system, as we see it taking root today, ultimately creates a society inhabited by human drones, most of whom finding contentment in becoming the parasites of society. Conservatives believe in free market capitalism, which creates incentives and motivates people to strive for a better way of life. Socialism promotes a government-controlled economy, which inevitably leads to poverty and entitlement mentality and victimhood. A free market capitalist system with limited government regulations and multiple thriving small businesses is crucial in maintaining a strong economy. The massive and excessive government regulations within the socialist model are prone to stagnating an economy, and without exception, this results in the middle class shrinking. A stable and flourishing middle class is the lifeblood of the American way of life. Without a vibrant and expanding middle class, a free society cannot exist. Socialism does not allow for a middle class. Socialism's very survival is dependent upon the federal government breaking the will of its citizenry and stymieing each person's ability to think for himself. Conservatism thrives when people are able to make personal choices uninhibited by government bureaucrats. Conservatives believe in personal liberty, while the leftist socialists believe that every citizen should be willing to relinquish his individual rights to the federal government. Most conservatives don't mind doing things that require perseverance, determination, and discomfort. These things build character and they build self-esteem. People on the left tend to make excuses for their situation in life and naively think the government can magically make their lives better. Existing in a leftist-driven society where people are forced to choose illusion and political correctness instead of reality and honesty eventually pushes a society towards dystopia. Our constitutional republic is based upon individual citizens being able to choose their own paths in life. Socialism is based upon authoritarian federal governments imposing their will upon the citizenry. Most conservatives seek moral clarity, in stark contrast to their counterparts on the left, who tend to embrace a selective morality and moral relativism. That's easy for me to say, but then I talk for a living. Moral relativism, ladies and gentlemen, wrecks souls. It creates people who lose their ability to prioritize. A person who is more concerned about a plastic bag's effect on the environment than the body parts of the aborted baby inside that plastic bag can eventually lose his moral compass. Selective morality and moral relativism have become a lethal combination in destroying human souls. The embrace of this fake value system has now produced a couple generations so far incapable of recognizing evil. How can anyone fight evil without the ability to recognize it? Left-wing technocrats are boldly trying to control and monitor people's lives. The dangerous combination of left-wing media and left-wing controlled internet is currently being used to stifle insensitive conservative opinions. The leftist media and the technocratic tyrants of the left have gone all in, attempting to brainwash people into becoming their useful idiots. These diabolical leftist authoritarians are unashamedly trying to convince citizens that convenience is more important than freedom of speech and more valuable than personal liberty and personal privacy. I'm still here. Benjamin Franklin once said, "Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty or safety." Today, technology is making people lazy and willfully ignorant. People are foolishly relinquishing their personal liberty and privacy and actually receiving nothing in return for this concession but endless worry. Have people become so seduced by technology that many of them are now willing to become enslaved by it? To paraphrase Franklin, those who are willing to give up essential liberty and personal privacy to left-wing technocrats and left-wing bureaucrats deserve the tyranny and dystopia that will ensue. Encouraging people to think for themselves is what every person should endeavor to do. Enlightening people and highlighting the huge contrast between conservatism and socialism is a tactic conservatives need to employ when confronting the many leftists of today, the leftists who seem to have this twisted love affair with socialism. The time is now for conservatives to take a real stand in defending their beliefs and principles. It is time for all of us within the conservative movement to plant the seeds of discernment within the lives of the many people who currently find themselves thirsting for the truth. Again, I apologize for the squeaking chair. Sounds like the inner sanctum. John Scotto, American thinker. That's a good one. We have touched on socialism. We have touched on John Brennan. We've touched on, we've been talking about these things. And this was something I had mentioned one other time a couple weeks ago. It would seem like we're in this endless cycle of the same half dozen news stories that just get added on to and followed up on. You know, we've talked about socialism. We've talked about immigration a little bit. We've talked about the deep state. We've talked about Robert Mueller.
Bueller. Bueller.
Oh, for the love of God.
Mueller.
Bueller. Mueller.
Bueller.
Oh, jeez. Okay, got it. Never mind. So, yeah, and we've talked about all these things, and it's all the same. You know, we've talked about, and like I said, every week there's a new revelation. There's some new thing that's going on. As far as the you-know-who investigation goes,
Bueller. Bueller.
I know. I'm sorry. At any rate, as far as that investigation goes, we've talked about that. We've talked about what's been going on with, again, the deep state. And we've talked about just in general how mentally defective, and I hate to say that because I'm not going to worry about being mean-spirited and screw them if they can't take a joke. These people are just, I mean, it's just the left has something wrong with them. Now, I talked about this last week, too, and I'm going to bring it back again just as a, you know, some of you guys. Incidentally, first-time listeners, welcome. Happy to have you here with us. Thank you so much for being a part of the show and allowing me to do it. Okay, we talked about San Francisco where they've banned plastic straws. They've banned having lunch at work. They've banned tourism, you know, everything. Now, the one thing they have not banned, apparently, is pooping and peeing on the streets. You can do that. You can't have a straw. But you can poop and pee on the streets, and you can do it while holding your plastic heroin syringe as you shoot up while you're pooping and peeing, I guess. So it's cool. You can poop and pee. Well, here's what's going to happen. Now, I want you to just think about this situation for a minute. As normal, right-thinking folks, we live in a major city. We got a problem. It's kind of a new problem. And it's always been kind of a little problem, but now it's a really bad problem. Well, what's the problem? Well, here's the problem. We've got these homeless people, right? Every city's got them. Yeah, I know. And they're pooping and peeing. Well, yeah, they got to poop and pee. But it's against a lot of poop and pee out here. You can't do that in public. You got to go find a restroom, all right? So the city sets up a bunch of porta potties all over the homeless, you know, where the homeless population has a tendency to congregate. Well, those wound up being used as banging shacks for either prostitutes or heroin, either one, you know, you can get your little bang in there, and people were moving into it. So they just say, okay, you know what? You're homeless. You got it bad enough as it is because you're homeless. We're not going to get too excited if you poop and pee on the streets. Well, these are the people in the city council who don't have to hang around too much on the streets of San Francisco. And they'll be in areas where the police are going to make sure that the homeless people don't poop and pee. But not to worry. These guys have come up with a solution. And as I told you about this last week or week before, whenever I did it, and I'm not making this up. And I got 5 minutes to wrap this up, so we're going to have to get to it. In about a month, a team of 5 public works staffers are going to be patrolling the alleys around Polk Street and other hot spots, for lack of a better term, where you're going to find a lot of homeless people, in a vehicle equipped with a steam cleaner. They'll begin to – no, 5 guys. 5 guys. Now, there's probably almost 1 million homeless people No, wait a minute. That's not right. Let me look this up. I'm sorry, 600,000, over 500,000 homeless people. I'll make sure I got that right. So you got 500,000 homeless people pooping and peeing. Maybe not all of them are pooping and peeing on the streets. Maybe some of them are pooping and peeing in trash cans. Maybe some of them are pooping and peeing in dumpsters. Maybe some of them is pooping and peeing on themselves and keep on trucking. I don't know. But you're going to have several hundred thousand homeless people pooping and peeing at various times throughout the day. That's a lot of pooping and peeing. Five guys to handle all that pooping and peeing. One truck and a steam cleaner. Who are you going to call? Okay, that's like shooting the guy with a machine gun and handing him a Band-Aid. Look, cities like San Francisco, and the root of the problem comes down to this. Three things in San Francisco. This is a serious problem. Think of the hygiene, man. They lost $40 million in revenue because the Chicago Medical Association decided they were not going to have their medical convention in San Francisco because of all the public pooping and peeing. Folks, when Chicago tells you that your city is a poop hole, you got a problem. When people from Chicago go, San Francisco, no. I think I'm gonna stay home. I think I'm gonna stay home. I might get shot, but there's less chance of any serious infection from all the pooping and peeing on the street if I fall down. I'm just gonna stay home. So here's the thing. We're not going to get to it. This isn't the first time that San Francisco has tried to solve a problem with this. It's not going to change anything. It's a sop. But the thing is, there are people out there in San Francisco who are going to buy into this, thinking that five dudes and a Stanley steamer are going to save San Francisco from the pooping and peeing epidemic. We're down to the end of the road, folks. Listen, I want to thank you all for the opportunity. Thank you, Gwendolyn, for the opportunity to hang out with you guys and do this. I've enjoyed it tremendously. We will be back Thursday with another live version of Conservative's Perspective, and that's coming up in just a couple of days. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of things happening because we live in interesting times, and we'll be taking a look at them as we do. Through a conservative's perspective, God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States of America. See you on Thursday.